Stung by the criticism, it's rare for a small-town prosecutor to have a book written about one of his cases, and a very unflattering one at that, Bill Peterson roared into action in the Debbie Carter matter. He had something to prove. The investigation was stale. The poor girl had been dead for more than 4 years, but it was time to nail someone. Peterson and the police had believed for years that the killer was Ron Williamson. Perhaps Dennis Fritz was involved, maybe not, but they knew Williamson was in Carter's apartment that night. They had no evidence, just gut feelings. Ron was out of prison and back in Ada. When his mother died in August 1985, he was in jail awaiting a competency hearing and staring at 2 more years in prison. Annette and Renee reluctantly sold the small house where they had grown up. When Ron was paroled from prison in October 1986, he had no place to live. He moved in with Annette and her husband and son, and for a few days tried hard to fit in. But his old habits returned. The late-night meals he prepared with great noise, the all-night television routine at full volume, the smoking and drinking, and the day-long naps on the sofa. After a month or so, with nerves frayed and her family on edge, Annette had to ask him to leave. The 2 years in prison had done nothing to improve his mental health. He had moved in and out of various state hospitals, with different doctors trying different combinations of drugs. Often, there were no medications at all. He would survive for a while in the general prison population, then someone would notice his bizarre behavior, and off he'd go to another mental unit. Upon his release, the Department of Corrections made an appointment for Ron to see a social worker at Mental Health Services in Ada. On October 15th, he met Norma Walker, who noted that he was taking lithium, Navane, and Artane. She found him to be pleasant, controlled, and a little strange, sometimes staring without saying anything for as long as a minute at a time. He planned to go to a Bible college and maybe become a minister, or he might start his own construction company. Big plans, a bit grandiose, thought Walker. 2 weeks later, still medicated, he kept his appointment and appeared to be doing fine. He skipped the next two, and when he showed up on December 9th, he demanded to see Dr. Marie Snow. He had stopped taking his meds because he'd met a girl who didn't believe in them. Dr. Snow tried to convince him to start taking his pills, but he said that God had told him to give up the booze and all drugs. He missed appointments on December 18th and January 14th. On February 16th, Annette called Norma Walker and said his behavior could not be controlled. She described him as psychotic and said he had mentioned killing himself with a handgun. The next day, he came in, very nervous but somewhat reasonable. He demanded a change in medication. 3 days later, Walker received a call from McCall's Chapel. Ron was making a scene, yelling and demanding a job. She advised them to treat him with caution and call the police if necessary. That afternoon, Annette and her husband brought him in to meet with Walker. They were distraught and desperate for help. Walker observed Ron to be unmedicated, confused, disoriented, delusional, detached from reality, and completely unable to take care of his own food and shelter. She doubted he could survive on his own even with proper medication. The solution was long-term institutionalization for his diminished mental capacities and unmanageable behavior.